for me, it's like a philosophical thing. Like, if you don't have a penny, can you still be a penny pincher? You know?
You'd have to be a nickel pincher.
Which lacks the alliterative value.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure you are in as much disbelief as I am. Yes, the number one podcast on the internet, The Sophisticates, is back. A new episode after a lull of many months caused mostly by me, Matt Patches, and my inability to schedule my own life. But we are back, and life is good, because now we can finally talk about everything that's been on our brains. Very important topics. And who is we? We, of course, is comprised by my two co-hosts. Returning, now back in New York, but actually in New Jersey currently, Rajan Mudambi.
Yes, in New Jersey, unfortunately.
Yes, but being
normally
back
in
the
Brooklyn.
Tri-state area, you now have your rough, badass edge back.
I do, yes.
Which was softened by Boston, I assume. And, of course, rounding the trio out is the esteemed king of cool, Ryan Pfister.
Greetings from the district.
I feel like you just scoffed at your title of king of cool. You are the king of cool. In my mind.
Well, I must say I did purchase a pair of cool-looking skater shoes on the advice of one of my coworkers.
What is that? Skechers? What are you talking about?
They were Skechers, but they were a Ralph Lauren version of Skechers.
Are we talking about the shoes that have the wheels that pop out?
No.
You mean shoes to grind rails and shit like that? Like it had, yeah. Isn't that what they do? I remember kids in high school used to have those skater shoes, and then they would run up to different railings and skid down them, and that was skater with an eight.
So they're like the shoes for parkour and stuff.
You can also simply wear them while on a skateboard.
Oh well, that's a lot lamer actually. Than
I mean that is the origin of the skater part.
Well, I hope you do some grinding in the near future. But I don't think anyone wants to hear about our lengthy explanation of why we've been off the air for so many months, even though it does have to do with like a secret war, sea monster fighting, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we might as well get on to today's first of three topics. The logic of pennies. So after many months of contemplation and trying to figure out the best way to re-enter back into the podcast sphere, I obviously settled on the idea that pennies are useless. I get so much loose change from buying things, and I feel like I'm one of the only people who uses cash anymore. I don't know, that doesn't make sense, right? That feeling that I'm just spending cash and everyone's swiping cards. But as someone who continues to use cash aplenty, I get a lot of loose change, and I really, really don't have a reason to use pennies ever. I never pay exact change for anything, and then I always collect my pennies in this giant jar that's in my way, and then take it to one of those change machines that magically puts it into bills, and I just have bills again. So my question is really why we still have the penny. Do we need the penny, and why we've been keeping it around since the beginning of American economy? But my inner feeling is we can't get rid of the penny. You can't get rid of the penny. It's so special. It's the smallest of all currency. I don't think we could abolish the penny ever.
Why not?
Because it's part of our economic history. No matter what we want to do, like no one's ever. I don't recall hearing anything about getting rid of the penny ever in our lifetime. But they're always trying to get rid of, like, they're trying to get rid of the dollar bill with the Sacagawea dollars and the multi-president dollars with the gold coins and such. But why introduce more coins when there's coins that are superfluous?
I think, first off, the people are trying to get rid of the dollar bill, but that's not going anywhere because people don't like coins. They like bills much better. But
oh, is that so?
Coins are annoying. You got to have them in a little coin purse. They don't fit in your wallet, and you can't just pull them out. But with pennies, I don't think that you can say that we can't just get rid of it because it's part of our monetary history and everything. Because there's absolutely precedent for revamping the types of currency used. Most notable one that I can think of is in England when they got rid of the shillings and farthings and tuppences and sixpences and everything and just went to straight pence. So now they just have a penny, five pence, 10 pence, and 20 and 50. And that nobody died there from this. I mean, it worked perfectly fine.
Well, so you don't know that nobody died. You know,
well, people might have died.
Somebody collecting all the pence pieces, probably there was a slip, fell in the river.
But I mean, basically what I'm saying, what I mean to say by this is that just because it's, we've used pennies forever, that doesn't really mean that we have to forever. I mean, and currency even in the U.S. has changed. We didn't always used to have these green colored notes either. I mean,
how would you even go? I don't even know how people would go about getting rid of the penny. Like, I guess I don't know a lot about the system, but I feel like there's people who are clinging on to it for historical reasons, but there are also people who are going to cling on to it because things cost that much. If you have something that costs $5.27, then you need a penny, right? People are able to choose the price of objects that they want to sell, then there needs to be currency to provide for that.
Well, I think what you would do is round. In that case, they would force businesses to round up or down to the nearest 5 cents.
But with the existence of credit cards, can you ever implement that? Because people want to do the $5.99. People want to do the $6.99.
Yeah, it would just become $5.95 then.
But I don't think that has the same appearance.
Exactly.
I mean, for me, like I guess for me, it's like a philosophical thing. Like, if you don't have a penny, can you still be a penny pincher? You know,
you'd have to be a nickel pincher,
which lacks the alliterative value.
Well, it's funny to think that, but I think that the penny holds a lot of value in that respect, in like penny pinching, or also collecting. You know, give us your pennies for UNICEF. That sort of thing. Like, doesn't that entice people to give away money?
I mean, in small amounts, but yeah. I mean,
but
I think the
principles, every amount counts.
You know, if you are like I pride myself after our calculus teacher, Mr. Schwartz, once explained that.
I'm glad that we've all had the same calculus teacher, so this makes sense to all three of us.
He taught us that there is it's very hard to have a reasonable. Hard limit about the amount of change which you'd be willing to bend down to pick up. You know, would you do 5 cents but not 4 cents? So as a consequence of that, I try to pick up any change I see that I can reasonably pick up.
But then what do you do with it?
Then I put it in my coin jar, and then yearly or every 2 years, depending on how long it takes me to accumulate a reasonable amount, I take it to the grocery store to exchange at the Coinstar for an Amazon gift certificate.
So the only purpose that the penny really serves to you is to collect and then get something bigger.
Yes.
But then, so does that give it enough worth to keep it around?
Well, I mean,
being a penny pincher enough to keep something. I mean, I imagine it costs pennies to make pennies.
Yeah, I mean, this Wikipedia article indicates that it takes 1.7 cents per penny.
Really?
Yeah.
So we are losing money with every penny made.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that for reasons other than practicality, the penny must exist. And Rajan, I know you were talking about, get rid of it and we'll just have a different lowest currency.
It's been done elsewhere. It's been done in Australia and New Zealand.
But don't we need it to also teach people about saving money? Do we need the penny to give to kids to be able to collect? Do we need it? You know, the three of us are obsessed with homeless people for some reason. Don't we need the penny to give to those people to be able to get by? Like, if
do
we
you,
have a nickel,
you
are you going to give that?
Pennies?
Do I give homeless people pennies? I leave them by the bridge. for them to collect. We're like, what is it?
Oh, no.
But don't you think more people are willing to throw a few pennies the way of a homeless person who might be mulling about the subway or something rather than their nickel?
No,
and I don't think you're able to
afraid.
Abolish that idea that the nickel is worth something significant.
I don't think...
Am I being Scrooge about this?
I don't think I would give money to a homeless person, like, if it were that little. I would just feel like a complete douche that I'm...
You
oh,
wouldn't
yeah,
give a homeless a person a penny?
What, why... Like, basically what you're saying is you're... I view you as so desperate that you're going to, like, jump up and down for a penny. I mean, it seems a little bit like a skinflint to give them a penny.
So the penny is actually an insult.
To me, it seems like it'd be worse to give them a penny than not give them anything. Obviously, that's kind of stupid, but still, like, that's just the way it feels to me.
Well, but, no, I don't. I think that's a reasonable thing, because I think that as a homeless person, you are very concerned about, you know, dignity and appearance. You are more sensitive to those things.
As a homeless person?
Yeah.
I think you're incorrect. I think as a homeless person, you're a little concerned about getting enough money for a cup of coffee and a sandwich. And every penny counts. That's why UNICEF is collecting pennies. That's the whole purpose. That's not embarrassing.
No. UNICEF collects pennies because UNICEF amasses huge amounts of small denomination things, and it becomes something large. And so then they can actually do something with it. Nobody can really do anything with a penny.
I disagree. You could do a lot with enough pennies. Any person can amass pennies. That's what Ryan is doing every time he buys an Amazon gift card.
Yes, but it takes him 2 years.
But I think you need the penny to have that momentous occasion. Like, if you collected dimes, you'd be there in no time. Isn't there something gratifying about collecting the pennies and watching them, you know, fill a bank?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a principle that we need to encourage in society, that small amounts can add up to something big. I mean, what is this message we're going to send that... Oh, this amount is so small that it really doesn't even matter what happens to it.
Right. So, but if you're embarrassed as a homeless person, then you have the wrong idea about how life should be lived. You should be collecting those pennies.
Maybe there should be a little like marketing campaign. Like, the homeless people should put out an ad. Like, it's okay to give us your pennies.
I don't think they can afford to put out an ad.
Isn't there like that Homeless People magazine or something that they give out?
Yes, exactly. For what's pamphlets. It called? Homeless People magazine. Homeless People Weekly.
I cannot believe you brought the homeless people into this.
It comes out on cardboard. No, but Rajan, at the beginning of this discussion, you said that the penny is easily eliminated from American currency. My question to you is, are there reasons outside of financial, economical purpose that the penny should stand? It sounds like there are. The penny is a lesson. It's a symbol for saving.
Well, you're saying that you have to look at it and say that every penny counts and is all very valuable. But if you think about it, we didn't used to have a unit of currency as insignificant as a penny. Granted, we've always had pennies. But with inflation, pennies now... Or pennies back, you know, in 1960 or whatever, are probably the equivalent of a nickel now, or maybe a dime even, you know? So we didn't have this unit of currency back then. It may look the same, perhaps, but it wasn't the same unit of currency.
Well, it carries the same emotional weight.
Does it? I don't think so. I feel like... When I read stories...
About what? Like penny candies? Or like, I went to the soda
shop?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you still save those pennies.
Because then it kind of took on the meaning of, oh, this is like a fifth of a candy or something like this. Now it's like, you know, you can't buy a candy unless it's at least a quarter, you know?
But you're saying it's more important now. The penny is more important.
Why?
No. I see that the idea here is that, okay, if you're back 50 or 100 years ago, like, in order, we didn't have tenths of a pennies.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But it wasn't a big deal, even though a tenth of a penny is probably worth what a penny is today.
Right, but because it's worth less, then doesn't it carry more weight now, in present day?
What?
Because it's worth less, collecting the pennies is worth more. Ah.
No. No. Collecting the pennies are worth less if they are individually worth less.
But I'm talking about as a symbol for saving. They're more important to collect.
No.
To keep on every to keep every penny, to watch your savings.
I would say they are less important, but still important.
That's fair.
I would say they are currency, so you shouldn't like waste it, but there's absolutely no reason it should remain current.
So what should I be doing with the 1,000 pennies I have in my desk? Should I give them to homeless people, or is that going to
You should probably
them?
Redeem them for a $10 bill.
Amazon gift certificate.
I'm going to Coinstar right now.
Do it.
Well, on that note, let us move on to our second topic for today. Individual gendered bathrooms.
So today I went through some training at the IBM office. And during the break, we all had to, everybody went out to go to the bathroom. And there was only two bathrooms in our section. And they were individual bathrooms, so only one person could go in at a time. But one was labeled men and one was labeled women. And I've also seen this frequently at restaurants. And the question is, if only one person can go into the bathroom, why do you label it with a gender?
To give equal opportunity. Just because something's available doesn't mean you equip it differently, too. You're using the resources of the bathroom, I think. You need to make available for each person what they need. You don't even know what's in a women's bathroom.
Well, I assume there's no urinal in the women's individual bathroom. So I guess they can save on equipping one of those.
Yeah, it's a water-saving technique.
I mean, often there's no urinal in a men's individual bathroom.
Yeah, that's true. There isn't always one.
And I mean, there's also these interesting ethical questions, or I guess it's more of an etiquette question. For instance, if the woman's bathroom will often have a longer line. So the question is, if there is no line for the men's bathroom, can you let a woman into the men's bathroom and sort of guard the bathroom, or is that taboo?
Well, it happens all the time. I mean, I see women coming out of men-labeled bathrooms all the time.
I do think it would be more acceptable for a woman to go into the men's individual bathroom than the other way around.
Yeah, it's just not fair. It's for some reason, if I'm coming out of the women's bathroom... Oh, wait, let me re-say that. When I come out of the women's bathroom... It's always creepier than when women come out of the men's bathroom. And I think that has to do with something that you touched upon, Ryan, that there's always lines. I mean, the bathroom process for women takes longer so that they have to, you know, there's always lines forming and we're just in and out in 2 seconds. If anything, there should be no individual bathrooms for men. And they should make them smaller and they should double up on women's bathrooms. There should be no individual bathrooms whatsoever.
Well, if there's not space for more than two toilets in a restaurant, then what do you want them to do?
I want them to make men's bathrooms smaller and double the size of women's to get people through faster.
But you're missing the point. The point is there's no room for three toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you make the men's room smaller, I mean, it still needs to exist. It takes up more space then.
Impossible. Where are you talking about? New York? There's no space problems there.
You're right. I'm sorry. What am I thinking about?
I just think it's a tradition thing, too. You know, you want to be able to come and, like, here is my space to go to the bathroom. I think my own experience using public bathrooms, I don't enjoy using them in general. But you want to know that you can have the space. So by sectioning it off to men and women, you at least know that you're in your comfort zone in some way.
And then you'd be uncomfortable using this bathroom. Maybe a girl would be more uncomfortable using a bathroom if they knew there was a guy using it before.
Well, I mean, that's a fair point. We're gross.
I don't remember. I don't remember if we actually talked about this or if it was just a topic that I saw somewhere, perhaps.
Yes.
But I think we talked about the bathrooms in this situation, like. Are the men's rooms naturally much grosser than the women's rooms? And so I guess if they are in fact grosser, then that would be a reason for having these assigned genders.
But I don't think it has to do with truth. It's not about whether they
are. Oh, you
are
think it's
or
about
aren't.
Perception?
Yes, I believe it's about perception. I probably think women's bathrooms are grosser than men's bathrooms.
Do you?
I have my reasons that I don't want to like get into detail-wise why they might be, but the other thing is, it seems that I guess if they're not, I mean, you're locking the door on these individual bathrooms too. Yep. People can't just walk on in, right?
Nope.
You always see women going off in pairs, and you can fit multiple people in the bathroom. Guys, it's not obviously not the same, but I guess there is absolutely no reason besides perception to section them off.
Well, here's another interesting aspect of it. I suppose as a guy, I should actually favor these gendered bathrooms, because especially in a bar situation, I feel like you can often cycle guys through the guy bathroom much faster than the girls are cycling through their bathroom.
Sometimes, but there's also the situation where you have places where you don't have an even split of guys and girls there, and you basically never do, and yet the portioning out of the bathrooms is still even. So in that situation, then the line outside the guys' bathroom ends up becoming longer because there aren't as many girls there.
Oh, like so the effect of like a sausage fest on the bathroom here.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, like some bars you go to, there might not just be as many girls there, just by like the type of bar it is, like maybe a sports bar or something, and or like at sporting events maybe. Things like the sporting events, they don't usually have individual bathrooms, so it's a slightly different issue. But in bars, if it's like a sports bar, then maybe you'd have this situation.
So more bars should actually reassess based on their demographic. Like once they've opened, test the waters, reassign the bathrooms, sort of thing.
Maybe, but
well, how about dynamic bathrooms? What if they had little signs that you could change, whether it was men or women?
Oh, kind of like slide out and put. Well, the question is why.
But I would want to use a computer algorithm, it would dynamically measure the somehow measure the gender of the people waiting in line for the bathroom.
that reminded me of on some bridges where they have rush hour going in one direction, and they just they have maybe six lanes, and in sometimes of the day they have four lanes going in one direction, and sometimes the other only two. So this way you're going you're going to kind of just create an artificial, different size of the – are we still talking about there are two individual bathrooms here? And mm-hmm. just sometimes it'll flash man and sometimes it'll flash woman and say, okay, the next man can come into this bathroom. The next woman can go into this bathroom.
No, it could become unisex.
Yeah, it would have to go default to unisex.
So, on football, it might be men and women normally, but on football night, it might become man and unisex.
That's just sexist.
I see.
But the
question that's the problem. You're
going to
offend someone.
Still.
You're going to offend someone by doing that.
Oh, yeah. Why? I think you definitely will.
How are you offend someone?
And you're also not going to get people to not go in those other bathrooms. That's the thing. You feel that everyone sticks to those. And do you think that if they are labeled men and women that people should stick to that? Are you offended if you see a man coming out of the woman's bathroom or a woman coming out of the man's bathroom?
No, I'm not offended by it, but I guess I'm a person that if there are rules imposed, I get annoyed if I have to break the rule to do what makes common sense. I would like the rules to adhere to common sense.
Right. I mean, I really don't. I have a problem going into a women's bathroom if it says women's. I don't know why. I mean, it's just a bathroom and no one's around. But what if I was in the women's bathroom and then a woman started waiting in line? I'm taking her space.
Well, yeah, the question is a larger issue here. As guys, do we have, if there's a queue of people waiting for the bathroom, do we as guys have a right to be able to cut and have our own separate line? Are we entitled to that because we are faster peers?
I don't think so. My instinct is no, because you can't judge. You have to wait. It's the unwritten rules of the actual written rules.
you can't say anything, but I think in there's another factor, and that's kind of the desperation of how badly you need to go. And I think that is a factor that can be that can, you that know, violate those
all
rules.
Labeled,
I think that can violate the rules there, but I think that's the only way you can.
Well, it sounds
break
like
the straight up line.
It sounds like there's actually no that. Reason to have everything should just be unisex.
Okay, I mean, if you know, you'll be angering. I think there are guys who would say that they deserve to go faster.
So it's our own kind of mental issue, our own mental block that keeps us from being free. We need to have bisexual bathrooms. Everyone needs to just be in one big heap.
Well, let's just label it men and women, and under it would say, or if you really have to go.
That sounds like a fair solution. On that note, let's move on to our third and final topic of tonight. Structured procrastination.
Okay, so as an expert procrastinator, I mean from this is what is procrastinate? Procrastination is when you put off an important task because you just don't feel like doing it. But that doesn't mean you can't do work, because if you basically what you could the way you could get around it is by instead of procrastinating by playing solitaire or checking Facebook or whatever, you could maybe do your taxes. I don't know, like just do something else that's somewhat important.
That's fun, like something, doing taxes.
Maybe you're procrastinating from doing your taxes, but in any case, like doing something else that's somewhat productive but is not as important, so you still like feel like you're procrastinating. That you don't feel like you're being a complete waste.
I try to do that. I'm very bad at that. I think we kind of may have touched a little bit on this before, but I have this issue. Like, I want to get stuff done all the time, and I know that I have to be utilizing my time because of how much I'm attempting to do in a single day. But I try and go through phases where I'm doing tasks that don't require my brain and tasks that do require my brain. You know, I do a, you know, if I'm entering data into a chart, or if I'm uploading things to the internet for my job, and or things that I can, I actually, you know how I differentiate it? I can listen to music with lyrics when I'm doing something productive that doesn't require my brain, and I cannot listen to music with lyrics when I'm doing something else. So I try and listen to like classical music or something like that, and I try and use music to structure my procrastinating.
I mean, I guess the thing that I like about structured procrastination is that if you are truly aware of it, I think you can really leverage it to get things done that you would normally procrastinate themselves, as long as you can find something else that you'd rather procrastinate more about. So, for instance, I had this this software program that I had been meaning to update for months, and finally I reached this point where I really needed to sit down and figure out what my career plan was for the next 9 months. And I really didn't want to do that. So once I finally settled that I really had to figure out my career plan, that weekend I immediately sat down and coded and finished the program in like 6 hours.
So you use something life-altering to pressure you into doing a smaller task.
Yes, even though that smaller task normally would have been big and something that I would have procrastinated by, like, watching television.
But isn't the other task itching at you while you do it? How do you distract yourself far enough with one something that's actually productive while the other isn't the other one haunting you?
No, but that's kind of the goal, is like you need something that is more mentally consuming to be able to effectively procrastinate from the other thing that you don't want to do. Because if I was watching television, I would think about it more.
But then I think part of procrastination, too, is coming off of hard work. You need the downtime. I don't know if something as mentally consuming as what you're talking about, at least for me and probably other people, is enough of a relaxation period to be able to be true procrastination. So I'm antsy for true procrastination.
I don't think procrastination is really relaxation time. It's more postponement of work. It really has to do with pushing off this, trying to delay the inevitable, not trying to relax. So, I mean, whenever you procrastinate, there's always this kind of, you know, you've got this feeling that this is looming over your head, and this is what I really should be doing. And it's kind of uncomfortable, but you just, it's kind of like it's there. And that's what makes it procrastination as opposed to just goofing off. And the reason why you can do this structured procrastination is basically that, I don't know, if you're a procrastinator, you don't want to do this. You'll do anything else to avoid doing this task that you have to do. And even if that thing that you have to do is actually maybe even more work. Like, I don't think it has to do with it being harder or easier. It's just like, I don't want to do this. I'll do anything else.
So it seems like you have to then push yourself to a breaking point with the other thing. Does that make sense? You can't casually segue into structured procrastination. It sounds mentally damaging if you really push yourself that hard. It sounds like you do it successfully. Am I correct in that? That you have broken the secret of structured procrastination, you feel?
I wouldn't go that far, but I will say that I have utilized it.
You're writing a book on the subject.
No. Yeah, I'm writing a book. Oh, that's weird.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think you have to push yourself so far that it might be damaging to you. Like, you can become, you have this back and forth that it takes such extreme force to go in one direction and be like, no, I'm going to do something else productive. That feels distracting. It feels like procrastination, even though I'm being productive, that your brain, you'll have to keep pushing yourself further and further, and you might push yourself off the edge.
Well, I think the things don't have to become more and more important. It's just that, actually, I mean, things do intrinsically become more and more important. Like Pfister with your planning your 9 months a future.
Pfister,
like,
mentioning that scared the shit out of me.
That wouldn't be necessarily pressing, but right now, but maybe 2 weeks from now, it just suddenly became more important, you know? And so you now have to, like, you have to do it. Or it could become less important than something else that had, like, deadlines matter. So, I mean, you might have some report that you really need to get done by a deadline.
So do you think waiting to the final moment is actually key to getting more stuff done? Do you think
that's how it always works. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you should speak to someone else about that. But I frequently don't get anything done until like the hour before it's
due. Well, I feel
anyway.
Like people push you not to do that, especially when you're younger. You're taught not to wait until the last minute to do this. You know, get your homework done, and I'm still doing my homework like 40 minutes before my class or something, or like the big project. But do you think that it sounds like people would benefit from losing that mentality?
Well, sure, but I think the key here is that if you know, like, I think if you're a procrastinator, it's often a personality trait. It's something that you can fight, but it's still part of, it's to an extent, it's part of who you are. It's a structured procrastination, realizing that you're in this procrastinatory state and using that energy to do something that is also productive, that under normal circumstances you would have procrastinated anyway, is the key.
Yeah. I think you don't need to use structured procrastination if you're not a procrastinator. I mean, like
that makes a lot of sense. But who's not a procrastinator? Everyone is a procrastinator. You think there's really people out there? Have you ever met someone who doesn't procrastinate?
I have.
What? Who is this?
Let me qualify that. I don't know if I've met anyone who doesn't procrastinate at all, but there are certainly people who procrastinate a lot more than other people. And if you don't procrastinate that much, then this isn't that important an issue or an important thing to deal with.
Then just keep procrastinating. You know what?
Push things off a little bit, but a lot of people want to. Some people want to actually just like get it done,
right?
So they don't have to worry about it. Because I think that people who worry more about the things that they have to do, they tend to do it sooner. You don't procrastinate as much.
To kind of wrap up, do you think that then there's a problem with the word procrastination? Do you think that the concept of procrastination, like, you know, that it carries such a burden, that there's such a worry just about, oh, I am procrastinating. Thinking of it as procrastination actually hurts you.
Well, I think sometimes you are procrastinating, though, because there's, I mean, oftentimes in life, I think, especially if you have a looming deadline, there is that thing that you know that is the most important thing for you to do at that time. Like, I think you rationally know what you should be doing. And if you're not doing that, you are procrastinating.
But then semantics kills you, because from what we're talking about, it's like you don't have to feel like you're supposed to be doing that. You really can get away doing it the last minute, and that's fine.
Well, no, the thing is, if you were going to procrastinate anyway, if you were probably going to wait till the last minute, you can kind of fill this procrastinatory time doing something else.
I just don't want anyone to tell me I'm procrastinating ever again. Tell my mom to stop telling me that I'm procrastinating on my work.
I don't. This might be slightly off scope here, but I had a very important conversation about this the other day, and I wanted to get their opinion on. Are there certain activities that do not qualify within the scope of structured procrastination? For instance, I was trying to explain how while I was in this structured procrastination period, I could clean the house, or I could work on software program, or reading a book that like a nonfiction book that I meant to read to learn something, but I couldn't go out because there was no way I could write off the going out as productive. Does that square with your impression of structured procrastination?
I guess, yeah. You have to be able to rationalize it as being productive in order for it to fall under that umbrella. But maybe you're going out and seeing someone you haven't seen in a long time, and you've been feeling you need to do it. And that could be you know, structured procrastination. I don't know. I
think it's emotional productivity counts.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be work.
It just structured procrastination, while an ideal situation, it sounds very heady. It sounds very mental. And it almost worries me that overthinking it in that way would harm you more than just procrastinating freely.
It sounds like you value our mental state more than our productive output, Matt.
I do. I just want people to be okay. I want them to be okay. I you know why? Because I live in my head a lot. Which you could probably tell from listening to this podcast and all the previous episodes, which are on iTunes. On that note, I think that wraps up our return to the Sophisticates. So thank you both for coming back, and I'm glad we did this again. I'm glad that we're back on a bi-weekly schedule, I believe, is what we're deciding on here. And I'm setting it in stone by saying it in the podcast. But there's one more obvious segment that we have to get to. Ryan Pfister, have you gotten a haircut recently in the last 6 months?
I did get a haircut in the past 6 months.
It hasn't been that long, but where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in the I think I'm just starting to leave the Corey Matthews stage.
Of course.
And by the Corey Matthews stage, this is when he describes how he gets a haircut. It doesn't look good for a long time, and then it looks really good, but then it's time for another haircut. So I'm debating whether I'm phasing into the now it's time for another
haircut.
How
many days of good haircut do you get then?
I haven't really done metrics on it.
Well, I need you to evaluate this in a more scientific manner and report back.
I will do it in my next structured procrastination period.
You should create a survey and pass this out amongst all your acquaintances and get their responses.
Yes, and when you have enough pennies saved up, you can go get a haircut. Well, that wraps things up on this week's The Sophisticates. You know where you can find us if you've been listening, or if you're new for some reason. Go subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can find us on Tumblr at thesophisticates.tumblr.com. I think it's been that long since I checked. And we're on Twitter at Sophisticast. So we'll be coming back regularly. That's a plan, and I'm so happy to be back. And if you have suggestions or comments for topics or anything, drop us a line. We'll be glad to hear you, and we will talk to you later.